You're listening to Unveiling Mormonism from PursueGod.org.
All right, Lane, last week we covered the first eight questions that Mormons have to go through in an interview, first with their bishop and then with their stake president. Mm-hmm. They have to do this twice.
Yep.
To prove their worthiness to get this temple recommend card that allows them to go to the Mormon temple and do all these mm-hmm. ordinances as yeah. a Mormon, which is a big deal, right?
Yeah, because it's a very big deal.
If you don't have the temple recommend yeah. card and you yeah. live near a temple, then, I mean, you're kind of stuck, right?
Yeah, you really are kind of stuck. And so you have two interviews that last for 2 years, and you have this, you call it a recommend or a passport that allows you to go into the temple. When you go to the temple, you'll be greeted by someone that will look at your temple recommend and try to validate. Now, I think it's more digitized where mm-hmm. there's a QR code or something that's on there. So you can't make these things up, because I know that there were some that were making temple recommends.
Really?
And going into the temple, you know, like fake passports or fake okay. temple recommends. I mean, back in the day, I guess it wasn't too hard.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, this recommend is now good for 2 years. Two interviews that you answer 16 questions, and everybody in the world, wherever you're a Latter-day Saint, if you want a temple recommend, you get asked the same questions. So we're going to dive back into these now. In the first episode, you answered 50%.
Yeah.
So 4 out of the 8.
And is that good enough to get, I mean, am I on track to get my recommend?
I mean, you're failing, Brian. Like you're getting an F, buddy. You're failing. Yeah,
that's
so
pretty bad.
In the eyes of man.
Yeah.
But in the eyes of Christ, that's a different story.
All right, let's go to question number
okay,
9.
Okay, question
let's
see how 9. We do. Here we go. Let's jump into this. Do you strive to be honest in all that you do? So that's a simple question.
That's
and
it?
Again, that's it. Do you strive to be honest in all you do? And, you know, 20 years ago, it wasn't do you strive. It's are you honest in all your dealings? Mm. It's so different now. And so and that's fair, because they're trying to get a little bit away from this perfection. Mm. It's like Jesus is the only one that's 100% honest all the time. Sometimes you might not want to be deceptive, and you are deceptive. And so deception and lying, they're the same thing. Mm. But yeah, are you honest in all that you do?
I could imagine.
Do you strive?
Do I strive?
Do you strive? So are you consistent, you know?
What if I could see a 20-year-old boy who struggled with pornography,
yeah,
but who answered yes to obeying the law of chastity on what yeah. was that, question 5?
The law of chastity. Mm-hmm.
So at question 9, that now that there's just a little bit of like, should I be honest?
Yeah.
That I wasn't
it,
honest.
It could be like going to the grocery store and the clerk missed one of the items, and that put it in the bag with, you know, without you paying for it, and you noticed.
Yeah.
And then you just said, well, I didn't do this. Like, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
So if I answer the bishop, well, yeah, I noticed. And it's happened before, I'm sure. Almost everybody's had an opportunity. Integrity is what you want to be found out, you know, at the end of your life. Like, I mean, that's what you want, right? But it's the imputed righteousness of Christ that you want, I mean, ultimately. But is there anything greater than having integrity? So yeah, this one of these questions here be like, no, I don't think the bishop's gonna stop you from getting your recommend if you're like, yeah, I had two items that didn't get scanned in, and I knew it, and I didn't pay for it. I walked out of the store. That's not being honest in all you're doing. That's not striving to be in it. But I don't think the bishop would say, yeah, that's not gonna warrant. He would be like, well, what else is going on? What else are you doing?
Well, I could see a kid saying, well, I just lied to you about the chastity thing, because I do struggle with pornography,
yeah.
Bishop. So
that's
then
gonna stop you immediately.
That would, right? Then yes. He'd be like, okay, 100%. You need to, and yeah. Is he gonna give the bishop gonna give the kid some homework to do to like, we'll work on it and you come back in 3 months? Like,
you know,
how does that work?
Years ago when I was a kid, no. They would have just said, no, go work it out with your parents. But I would hope that they have something, but I don't know for sure, Brian, if the bishop or stake president would send you to a counselor. They do have a lot more church counselors available today for people that struggle with that, but I'm not sure exactly how they would handle that.
Lane, how many times did you do this interview?
Oh my gosh.
How many years, I guess?
Well, I mean, back in the day, we had the interview every year, every 12 months.
Okay.
And then they changed it to every 2 years because I think it was almost like getting your driver's license, you know? It's every 5 years.
Yeah.
But
that's where they're trending.
You know? Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't remember how many times I went for the first year. I don't remember when they changed it to the 2 year, but at least probably 20 plus times.
Okay. So can 20, I ask you this question? Yeah. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, if this is too personal.
Yeah.
How many times did you pass? Or how about this? How many times did you ever fail?
I never failed, but there were times that I felt like I wasn't worthy. And my bishop says, no, you're being too hard on yourself.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily remember the questions that I said why I was worthy or I wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't like a serious sin,
sure,
what they would label a serious sin. It might be where, yeah, I did, you know, I let the clerk, you know, scan or put two things in the cart that I didn't pay for.
Got it.
And then I felt bad after, and then I went and paid for it or something like that. But yeah, like there was never a time that I didn't. But I shouldn't have, because only Jesus really could answer these questions and be 100% and be worthy. So again, looking back in the best days, me being what I would say worthy, I still wasn't worthy. But there's so much pressure to be worthy. Mm.
It's so interesting, Lane. I have a Mormon friend who said that there's an unusually high number of Mormons in the CIA.
Yeah.
And my understanding, I don't know if this is still true, but my understanding is the CIA loves to recruit Mormons. And I'm talking about this with you, because they have to go through this like polygraph, and there's a pretty intensive task you have to go through. And this is what this reminds me of. So it's like passing a polygraph would be a breeze for you back then.
Yeah.
Because you had to do this high pressure interview twice a year with your bishop and your stake president.
Yep. And then it was twice every 2 years. And who knows if it'll be, you know, less in the future. It wouldn't surprise me. But it might be because people are so hard on themselves, and they do want a number of LDS people to go to the temple, obviously. Mm. So it's almost like, you know, a teacher that's grading on the curve. It's like, I have to have so many of my students get certain grades or I'm not going to look bad. Mm. So I almost feel like every 2 years it's easier to pass that worthiness than every year. I don't know if that's, you know, that's just me talking.
No, I think that's a good point. But I think it'd also put a lot of pressure on the bishops to, like, I used to teach high school, so to be like, I don't want to be the bishop that fails everybody.
Right.
Like, so you gotta, I'm sure the bishops over the years, it'd be interesting to interview a bishop to see how did you process this? And how
I mean, the stats are around 30 to 40% of the 30 to 40% that actually are active in the LDS church. So I think they claim 15, 16 million. And then if you slice that in 30 or 40% and then do 30 to 40% of that, that's who's going to the temple.
Okay.
So it's not a lot, and it's definitely less than that. So you just have a lot of LDS that are like, well, I'm good, but I'm not good enough to go to the temple.
Okay.
But then they're misunderstanding why the temple's even there. And if that's the case, then why would you want to be a Latter-day Saint?
Yeah.
Because the temple, you have to go to the temple to get exaltation. You have to go to the temple to get the celestial kingdom. Mm. Or best case scenario, you're going to be in the telestial kingdom. But Joseph Smith did say that if we could see the telestial kingdom, that we would fight for it. And he made it sound like it was better than what we have today. So I don't know.
So maybe that's fine. Maybe it's just like, I don't need to shoot for the highest level. Like, I'm good with the telestial. It's fine.
And there were times that I'm just like, well, geez, if it's better than, I mean, back in the day, I was like, yeah, I love life. I love God's creation. I love the earth, you know? So if it's slightly better than that, then I guess it's not that bad. So it's different, because really there's not a hell for me to go to.
Right.
Hell is, you know, separation from God, but it's still in a glory that's compared to the stars, and it's still better than what we have here. So yeah, it's not that bad.
So, okay, so back to my score. I'm going to give myself this one.
Okay.
So now I'm over 50%. I'm yes. 5 for 9 so
five
far.
5 for 9.
So I got the honesty one.
Yeah.
Anything else you have to say about honesty?
Well, yeah, and we definitely, you know, as biblical Christians, I mean, honesty reflects God's character in us, right? Like, that's important. But you can't earn salvation. It's not based upon that. But if you are in a relationship walking with the Lord, then that is not going to be prevalent in your life. It's not going to be like, yeah, I'm choosing to be dishonest. I'm choosing to lie. I'm choosing to manipulate. I'm choosing to be deceptive, because we're called to be honest. We're called to do those things. But again, it's not a salvation thing, because ultimately only Jesus could do that.
It's interesting to me. I mean, I don't even know the next questions.
Yeah.
This is all new to me too.
Yeah.
This is a fun episode, but it's interesting to me that honesty is in the top 10.
Yeah. That's true.
Cause there's other virtues. There's, there's more than 16 virtues.
Yeah,
so right. Which ones are we're going to, you know, what about the fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Mm-hmm. We don't have room to cover all
none
those.
None of those are in there.
Okay.
Yeah. None of those we really talk about.
So it's just interesting to think of how these questions even started. These weren't Joseph Smith's questions, were they?
You know, that's debatable.
Okay.
Actually. So
do we know where these questions came from?
Brigham Young, John Taylor, not 100% sure, but Joseph Smith was definitely part of this, but he told Brigham Young, he supposedly came back to Brigham Young in a dream.
Okay.
And some of the finalization of what to do and how to do it in the temple, Brigham Young was praying, and Joseph Smith says, well, you're going to have to figure that out, Brigham. So he doesn't even tell Brigham what to do. He just says, you're going to have to figure it out.
But
as far as where did, well, no, we really don't. But these questions have been, like, when I was active Mormon, there was 12 or 13. Mm. And depending on how you break down, like, some of the questions, there's a 3-part question to one.
Yeah.
There could be as many as 18 questions. Okay. So there are more questions today, but it doesn't surprise me, because there's so many more changes today too.
But Joseph Smith in his lifetime, he didn't come up with this, because the temple was barely a thing in his lifetime.
That's a good point.
Right? I mean,
towards the end of his life, that's when the temple,
Because that was when he became a leader in the Masonic Lodge, and that's a lot of the temple stuff is Masonic.
Yep.
So really, he didn't have time before he died
to really do that, right? And that's why... it could be why Brigham Young says that young Joseph appeared to him.
To give it more credibility.
Yeah. Right. So.
All right. So I'm 5 out of 9. What's question 10?
Okay. It's easy. Are you a full tithe payer?
Okay. All right. This is interesting. Okay. So I'll say in my church, yes, I am.
Yeah.
We give more than 10%. Now, what we teach our church, Lane, is we talk about, the Bible doesn't actually command us to tithe. The Bible commands us to be generous.
Yeah.
So now I'm not against tithing. I do it. I give more, tithe meaning 10%. I give more, we give more than 10% of our pre-tax. So I like, if you look at like our, we get flagged on our taxes all the time because we give such a high percentage, but we don't do it because we feel like it's a commandment from God to give 10%.
Yeah.
We do it because it's a commandment to be generous, and we believe in what we're doing, and we want to leave a legacy. We want people to know Jesus, and so we give to our church because we want a stake in what we're doing at our church. We give to pursue God. We give almost a tithe to pursue God and to our church. So that's what we do. But we don't require it of our church members. What we tell our church is, you should be generous.
Yep.
And a tithe is, we call it a benchmark. We say 10% is a good benchmark.
Yeah.
Like shoot for that. And then once you get there, maybe you can go beyond it.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And so, but we tell
be a generous giver.
Be generous.
Paul,
Most people are generous to themselves.
Yes.
And they're not generous to God. And so that's what we challenge people with, is be generous toward God.
It totally makes sense. Yeah. It's part of that relationship. But I remember going back and there was debates about, do I pay 10% on the gross or the net?
Right.
Right? And it was always 100%, it's the gross. So when I, at the end of each year, there's what's called tithing settlement.
Okay.
Okay. And every Latter-day Saint, including young kids as young as 5 or 6 or 7, they can meet with the bishop. So the whole family meets with the bishop, and it's called tithing settlement. And they get to declare if they are full tithe payers. And so this in the top 10, this, are you a full tithe payer? This could stop you right immediately. If you answered, you know, the other 9 questions and you come to, are you a full tithe payer? This right here could stop you immediately from going any further or even getting a recommend. Or if you'd be like, are you a full tithe payer? I'd be like, well, I'm mostly. Well, what do you mean mostly? Well, up until like 2 months ago when I lost my job and I was living on savings, I just decided that I wasn't going to pay any tithing on my last check that I got. And the bishop would say, well, you need to pay tithing on that. And so let's say in 2 weeks, you'll make a promise to make your full tithing back. Then I'll go ahead and sign this.
Okay.
So he could make, you know, an offer with that person or say, we'll come back in 2 weeks. If you paid your tithing, come back and then I'll sign on it.
So Lane, does the bishop have access to your income? W-2, stuff like that? No. Or are they just taking your word for it?
Just taking my word for it. But what's interesting is the church is able to see, you know, what annual donations are coming in from each person. And some of that information I'm hearing now, bishops are actually able to tell if you're telling the truth. To be like, well, I know, you know, so-and-so down the road, Mr. Jones or Murphy or whatever, you know, like he's a CEO of a company and he's declaring that he pays, you know, $15,000 a year. Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
If he's a CEO, it should be higher.
So they're probing, they're actually able to look deeper. And this is what I'm told bishops are now able to do, is they're actually able to see you know, what, not necessarily what job, but they'll remember that, but like how much they've paid in the past and see if it's consistent. To almost probe them and ask them more questions like, you sure that that's a full tithe paying? Or, you know, and ask more additional questions. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it comes down to the person declaring, are you a full tithe payer? And so that tithing settlement gives you that opportunity once a year to do that, but you're still asked, you know, once every 2 years, if you are as well.
Okay, so read the question again, because I've
got... Are you a full tithe payer?
Okay, so what if I were to say yes, but it doesn't all go to the Mormon Church?
Yeah, that's an easy one. Then it would be no.
Really?
Because you affiliate or you support another organization outside.
Yeah, but it's a good organization. It's, you know, it's United Way, or it's, you know, I've been given to the Gaza thing, or I've been given to Ukraine. Like it's... Or it's something at work. It's,
you would be instructed to give it to the church, and they will give it to, you know, whoever they feel needs it. Like even coming outside Temple Square, like I'd go down to the Salt Lake Temple, do an endowment, and I'd come out and I would see some homeless people there. And for many years when I, you know, when I was younger, I would just be like, oh yeah, I got a 5 or a 10 or whatever, and give it to them. And there were times in conference where they actually said, don't do that. You give us the money in tithing offerings. So there's tithing. What's interesting is I don't see fast offerings.
Right. I know. That's what I was going to ask too.
So in the past, I want to say fast offerings was in there, but I can't say for sure. But it's definitely not in there now. It's just, do you pay a full tithing? But fast offerings is, you know, essentially what it would cost my family for 24 hours or 2 meals, right? So whatever it would cost me to... you know, to go out and buy food for however many kids I have for one day, that's what I should donate as a fast offering. But that
and how often were you supposed to do that?
Every month.
So every month, could you, if you're not comfortable with this, you don't have to.
Yeah.
But when you were a solid, you know, you're making money,
yeah,
and you were Mormon, mm-hmm. what what percentage of your income would you say, would you estimate?
11%. I would always go 1 to 2% above the standard.
Okay.
And then as far as a generous fast offering, I mean, it was way more than 1 mil. It was probably 7 to 10. And, you know, being in mortgage banking, I mean, yeah, I made a good amount of money. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be generous because it's easy to be greedy. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, but I just like, it was another like, hey, by the way, God, are you watching?
Yeah.
You know,
look at me. That,
look at me. Like, and it was just in case, like it's fire insurance. You know what I mean? Like yeah. Literally, if I don't pay tithing, there are apostles and leaders that said that you will burn. If you do not pay a full tithing, you will burn.
Wow.
And you don't hear that today necessarily. I mean, not that I listen to conference stuff. Maybe they do still talk like that. But,
I doubt it.
But yeah, paying your tithing was also known as fire insurance.
Wow.
Because, you know, if you don't, you're going down.
Wow.
That's literally the hellfire that, you know, if you didn't pay tithing. And that's sad because that 10% allows me into the club. It's just like literally going.
It's dues. It's club dues.
It's your dues. Like, I could do everything. I could answer 15 questions. And if I do not pay a full tithing, you're not getting a recommend. So I'm not saying that the bishops don't be like, oh, you're good enough. I'm going to let you and send you on your way. Because mm-hmm. that probably happens. But down the line, if you admit that you don't pay a full tithing, then you can't, you know, technically get a recommend.
If you're a dad and your daughter's getting married in the temple.
Yeah.
You need your temple recommend.
Yeah,
is that true? So
yeah, you do.
If I can answer all these other questions yeah. except for this one,
yeah.
then do I have to come in there and settle up to be able to go? I mean, I've got a wedding to pay for yeah. my daughter, but now I want to go to the wedding.
Yeah.
I want to see the wedding in the temple, but I don't have a recommend.
Sorry, Brian, you can sit in the waiting room that's in the temple, but it's just a waiting room inside, right where you walk in the temple first. There's a bunch of seating and you can sit right there. And you
okay,
can
wait, well.
Or you can go outside the temple where they come out through the doors and then, you know, a lot of people would be outside as well. These could be active LDS, or most of them would not be active LDS because they would be in the sealing room with you and your spouse.
Okay, but hold on, Bishop. I still answered all these other questions. I'm faithful to my wife. Yeah. I'm honest, all this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm just behind on my tithing.
Yep.
Can I, the wedding's in 3 months. Can I just catch up on my tithing so I can go in there?
They probably would let you do that.
Okay.
Yeah, and so that's showing the faith that you're going to say, okay, I admitted that I didn't do it, so now I'm going to catch up. And then the bishop would be like, okay, once you've caught up your tithing, then come back and talk to me.
But it's like I've been given 5% a year for the last 10 years. How much do I have to catch up?
I mean, that's, yeah. I don't really know exactly how the bishop would handle that. I think the bishop could say, all right, as of today, will you agree to pay a full tithing? I think the bishop would, you know, like if you hadn't been doing it, I think they would want to try to get you to the temple because you're earnest and you do want to go. So they might just say, will you commit today going forward that you'll be a full tithe payer? Mm. And if I say yes, they'd be like, okay, next.
Okay, so let's get back to my
account. I do believe they really do want to give you a temple recommend.
Yeah.
If possible, and especially if you're willing to commit to pay tithing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't.
And they're probably, they're a dad probably.
Yeah.
So they get it.
Yeah, like, exactly.
They're going to be compassionate.
I don't think they're trying not to give it to you, yeah. but.
Okay. So I'm 6 out of 10, 6 still failing grade, yep. 60%. Yep.
We're going to question 11. Do you understand and obey the word of wisdom?
Okay. Our Mormon listeners don't know what you're talking about. What's the word of wisdom?
I mean, it's really a health code that was given early on. And what's crazy is if you go back in the history, Joseph Smith drank wine, he chewed tobacco, he did a lot of these things, and yet it's part of the articles of faith, right? I mean, at the end of the day, the word of wisdom, it was just a word of wisdom. It wasn't really even a commandment. It was just, hey, if you live, no coffee, tea, tobacco, or harmful drugs. And no drinking Coke and Pepsi.
Okay,
wait. Right? So that was added. That was added, you know. And so for years and years and years, you know, if you wanted a Coke or Pepsi, and I'm a faithful Latter-day Saint, and I'm like, yeah, I'll order a Coke, and I've got friends that are super LDS or my mom and dad would be like, are you kidding me? You're getting Coke? You're getting a Pepsi? I'd be like, yeah. And it'd be like, that is so bad. Huh. Today, it's not a big deal. Okay. What's crazy, Brian, is during this time, the church owned lots of Coke and Pepsi shares. And it's so weird. But yeah, like drinking Coke and Pepsi back in the day. And then like maybe 7-8 years ago, whatever. I don't even remember the timeline, but they officially came out and said, it's okay now to drink Coke and Pepsi. Okay. Like the church officially came out and said, it's okay to drink Coke and Pepsi.
Okay. So where does this word, so the word of wisdom is about tobacco, no alcohol.
Coffee, tea, or harmful
coffee,
drugs.
Coffee, tea, harmful drugs. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then Coke and Pepsi was added into that.
Yeah.
Was this Joseph Smith, Brigham Young?
Who? It was Joseph Smith.
Okay.
Yeah, which is ironic because it's like he was drinking wine and chewing tobacco, and he was coming up with this health code. And again, all these changes that are happening, they're just, you know, he's saying that he doesn't practice polygamy, and he's like, I can only find one wife. He's like, I don't know why I've been accused of having multiple wives. Mm. But he was living this secret life.
Right.
And you can go back and you can
do secret or sacred?
Well, both. Probably, right?
Right.
But you can go back and do your own research, guys. Like, if you really want to know the truth, I implore you to go back and do the history. And you can see that Joseph was saying one thing and doing a different thing. And it's frustrating as a Latter-day Saint because I've said this statement before, but I've said Joseph Smith would not be welcome in the church today. Mm. That's a statement. And that's because a lot of the things that Joseph practiced, a lot of the things that Joseph taught, they don't do today. So, I mean, what do you think, listeners? You know, ask yourself, like, if you go back and you do the history, it's like, yeah, like, we believe in spiritual polygamy, but Joseph and John Taylor taught that it was an eternal principle that could never not be practiced. And, you know, the fundamentalists and other splinter groups from the church still practice polygamy because they believe it was a law of God and that it could never be changed. So,
okay, Mr. Bishop, I have to be honest because I said that I was honest. At least I strive to be honest. No, I do not practice the word. I drink coffee in the morning. I mean, I don't smoke I'll have a glass of wine on occasion or a beer. It's not that big of a deal, but I'm not an alcoholic. But I would say that, no, I don't keep the word of wisdom. I think it's weird. And
most likely, again, that one question would stop you. So the bishop may say, well, will you agree going forward today to not drink coffee or drink wine?
No.
And this,
I won't agree.
These are questions actually that you would have to answer to get baptized as well.
Oh, okay.
So like there was an interview done by either the mission president or like the state mission president on the mission, and they would ask you some of these same questions. Do you drink alcohol? Do you smoke? Do you do these things? And then they would implore them not to do them. That could even stop you from being baptized. We didn't even talk about that.
Okay. My understanding is, and you were a missionary, so you converted a lot of people.
Yeah.
Did you talk about the word of wisdom early on in your missionary discussions with them?
Yeah, we did. And it was kind of a nail biter.
I would imagine.
Being in London, like everybody smoked. Like just almost every single person smoked. And so it was pretty tough to convince them that the word of wisdom was law of health. And I don't disagree, like, is smoking good for your lungs? No.
Yeah.
You know, like, some of these things are really good. I mean, you can drink too much of anything, but what's interesting is, what about soda? It's like, I don't see that soda is in the word of wisdom, but coffee is. And so you're telling me that as a Latter-day Saint, I'd go get my big gulp, 64 ounce or the 128 ounce big gulp. How many grams of sugar and corn syrup and all the other bad ingredients are in there? And that's okay.
Yeah. What about energy drinks nowadays?
Energy drinks. Like, yeah, again, like,
is that in the word of wisdom?
No.
Okay. So Mormons will drink energy drinks.
No, coffee, tea, tobacco, and harmful drugs.
You know, it's interesting for our non-Utah listeners.
Yeah.
There's a phenomenon here in Utah. These soda shops.
Oh yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I feel like that comes out of, it's almost like a reaction to the word of wisdom.
I do too. I really think, yeah, I wouldn't, it probably wouldn't, you know, be too far to say that a lot of the owners are probably LDS.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, it's like, hey, we can't do this, but we can do soda. We can do all these mixed flavors and do all this stuff. It's kind of like, you know, they've been held down their whole life in this bubble, and they're breaking out, and they're like, yeah, but we can do mixed colas now, and we can do all these different things. And
yeah.
And I can kind of see where you're going with that. But.
So what does the Bible say? Again, this isn't from the Bible, but the Bible has some stuff to say health.
1 Corinthians 8:8, you know, the food laws do not command us on certain foods. In fact, Jesus declared all food clean in Mark 7:18-19. Even the Book of Mormon says that God provides meat in the wilderness without condemnation. I did forget that the Word of Wisdom also says to eat meat sparingly. I had forgotten about that, and reading the Book of Mormon just reminded me. So, yeah, so I'm actually breaking. If I'm eating meat during the summer and not necessarily during the winter, then I'm actually breaking that. I don't think the Word of Wisdom is as big a deal, actually. The meat part, right? But if I'm drinking coffee, tea, or having a glass of wine, that would actually stop me. But again, the bishop could just say, well, will you promise to go forward? And I could say yes, and in my mind be like, heck no. But I'll just tell him yes because I got to get this.
Yeah.
And then it would be like, okay, next question.
So Lane, I'll confess, I grew up in a church that was a little legalistic mm-hmm. in terms of drinking. So basically it was a church that, I don't know if they taught this, but this is definitely how I felt.
Yeah.
Is that if you were a Christian, you didn't ever drink anything.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a glass of wine or a beer. And then as I really like grew older and owned my faith more and more, I realized that that's going too far. That's being legalistic. But I do. Scripture clearly says don't get drunk.
Right.
So I think the Bible does give some boundaries here. Mm-hmm. And I would say to our listeners, if you have a problem with alcohol, then you shouldn't drink ever. Yeah. You need to be legalistic about it.
Yeah.
But if you have a beer, if you have a glass of wine, I don't think you should feel like biblically that's wrong.
Yeah.
I think the pot question is a whole different question.
I do too.
I think smoking, drugs. But certainly with alcohol, I think just be wise.
Yeah.
Be wise about that kind of stuff. Yeah. And you can definitely dishonor God with what you take in with your body.
And I think Jesus actually says it's more about what comes out than what goes in.
Yeah, that's
right.
Good.
Yep. And why? Because he looks on the heart.
Right.
Because our mouth speaks what's in our heart. And again, that's the most important. Like if I'm going to worry about what kind of food and different things, like, yeah, I'm putting God in a box.
Yeah.
And yeah, religions do that. And I can see that. But as far as the Word of Wisdom goes, almost nobody, they all forget about eat meat in, you know, in times, in winter times and just eat it sparingly.
Yeah.
Like I can't remember the exact wording, but it's eat it sparingly and only in times of famine or in winter.
That's
I think that's the way that it's worded. And I'm like, man, you go to funerals, you go to mission farewells or homecomings, and there's always some kind of meat that's there. Right. So when I bring that up to LDS, I'm like, the Word of Wisdom, it's not a famine and it's not wintertime. But we're eating meat.
Wow.
I think, you know, it's kind of a little poke, but.
Did you ever bring that up to your bishop on that? Like,
no, I don't
did you eat meat today?
I don't remember doing that, but I have to my parents.
Yeah.
Just brought that up. I'm just like, well, if it's so important, then, you know, I come over, mom invites me for dinner and she loves making that roast. And it's good. Mm. And, you know, I'll never say no to that. But it's not winter and it's not a famine. And so.
I wonder, Lane, when at some point is the prophet going to get a revelation about red dye for the Word of Wisdom? Because now, I mean, this is like all in the cultural ethos today.
Right.
All this talk about the stuff that we have in our food, the processed food and all that kind of stuff.
Wouldn't surprise me that it seems to be that the God he follows continues to change.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said in other podcasts, if the God that he follows changes, he's not trustworthy.
Mm.
Like, because God is very clear in the Bible and the Book of Mormon that he does not change. that he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Why would we want to put our faith and trust in something that continues to move goalposts and we really never know, you know, his definition of love or what he actually did for us? Like, I can't put my trust in that God. Mm-hmm. So to me, you gotta ask yourself, you gotta reconcile this if you're a serious Latter-day Saint. And you gotta ask yourself, why is it okay for the prophet to say it's okay when the Bible's clear and the Book of Mormon's clear about that? Hmm. So,
all right, so I'm going backwards, Lane. I'm 6 out of 11. I'm back squarely in the failing category. What's question number 12?
Number 12 is, do you have any financial or other obligations to a former spouse or to their children? This is, you know, obviously a good one. So, you know, me being a divorced parent, for me to have a recommend, I would have to make sure that child support and alimony were fully caught up.
I see.
If it wasn't, this one thing could stop me from going to the temple.
Wow, that's
And this is a hard line. Like, I've known of cases where friends fell behind for whatever reason. They lost their job or, you know, they were just so depressed and so discouraged after the divorce that they just kind of went into a spiral. Mm. But this would stop them. And it's not that it's not a good question because, you know, I should be vested into my children. Like whatever happened between their mom and I, maybe we deserve, but my kids don't.
Yeah.
So this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but again, it's this worthiness thing. It's like, really? Like I fell on some hard times and I didn't pay my child support or alimony and I got behind on it. Then the bishop would say, okay, Lane, you need to get caught up on these. And if you don't, there's no temper. Well, what if it's months or years? Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not going to speak for the bishop because I think some bishops would be hardline and some bishops would be like, well, can you just start making a payment back to them? You know, show me proof with, you know, child support services that you're making a payment on back child support or back alimony or whatever. And we'll move on to the next question.
Lane, you could have given me 1,000 guesses at what these 16 questions would be. And I would not have come up with that one.
Wow.
Honestly.
True. Like,
I mean, it's not that it's not a good question.
Right.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, you should take care of your responsibilities. Yeah. That's super interesting that this makes the cut.
Yes.
Wow.
And I don't remember this being one of the questions years ago. I can't say for sure if it was or it wasn't, but I do know that there's 5 or 6 more questions that have been added in the last 20 years.
Yeah, this might be one of
this
them.
This could have been one of them.
Maybe divorce.
Because I just didn't pay attention to it because I wasn't in that situation.
Maybe our listeners can answer that if you know the answer to that. Okay, so but here's the good news, Lane.
Yeah.
Then I'm good on this question.
Yes.
So I'm up.
So you are good.
I'm trending in the right direction again. Yeah. 7 out of 12.
7 out of 12.
All right.
I think you're probably a D minus if you do the percentage. But question 13, if you have previously received your temple endowment, so you go through the temple for the first time, that's your endowment for yourself.
Okay.
Here's the partial question to that. Do you keep the covenants that you made in the temple?
Mm.
Now, it doesn't say, do you strive? Mm. Do you keep them?
What are those covenants?
Oh, gosh. You want to unpack all the covenants?
Well, some of them. Give me a summary of the covenant.
I mean, ultimately, do I dedicate my time, effort, and my money to building the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints? I mean, ultimately, my covenants are to the church, to the prophet, to the tokens and signs and the promises that I make, to the men that represent God in the temple. Am I keeping them sacred? Am I openly talking about them? Am I obviously taking the sacrament worthily every Sunday? This is just the beginning of unpacking the covenants. And it's very heavy. Because I'm being asked, do you keep the covenants? It's not, do you kind of keep them or do you mostly keep them? It's do you or don't you? And remember the call of Lucifer in the temple?
Mm.
When Lucifer, and this is the part which I didn't say, but the camera zooms up to Lucifer. Like it just zooms right up to Lucifer. And he says, if you don't walk up to every covenant and every commandment at this temple and this altar today, you will be in my power. So it reminds me of that quote. And then you said, I think that might be the only time that Lucifer told the truth, right? Ultimately, because we're in his power. So here we have a question that I'm going to answer that's clearly not truthful. Mm. Who is living the covenants? It doesn't, you know, like it doesn't say, do you mostly keep your covenants? It's, do you keep them that you made in the temple? Well, I go to the temple. I was going 3 or 4 or 5 times in a month. And each time I go, I'm supposed to be keeping the covenants. And when I would go, I'd be like, well, I'm trying. Well, I'm doing my best. But that's not what the question is. And that's not what Lucifer says. He says, if you don't walk up to everything, you'll be in my power. And I miss that, Brian, for many years when I went to the temple. Because in my mind, I'm like, I'm hearing something different. I'm hearing, well, I'm doing my best. And, you know, I'm not gonna be 100%, but that's okay. But I'm not being truthful to that question. So I go back on this question and I wasn't honest, Brian.
Yeah, right. So that, which means you have to retract your answer on the previous one.
I was saying yes, but there's what's called lying for the Lord. Mm. Somehow, and some, you know, general authorities have talked about it, but it's like doing something wrong for something right. And so it's like I want to go to the temple. I have an earnest desire to go to the temple to continue the light and knowledge that I need to obtain. And so, yeah, I mostly live the commandments or the covenants. So I'm going to say yes to that. But it's really, it should be no, I don't.
What if you said to the bishop, well, I strive. I strive to do it, but I don't do it perfectly. To be completely honest, I don't do it perfectly. What do you think he might say?
I don't know, because it doesn't use the word perfect. It just says, do you keep them?
And I'd say, well, then I guess I'm going to have to say, no, I don't.
Well, I mean, if you asked a person, do you keep them? Like, to them, keeping them could be like, yeah, mostly.
I see.
Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there could be some variance in there. And that's why I don't think it uses the word perfect for that reason. It's just like, do you or don't you? Do you drive the speed limit? You know? Well, in my mind,
no.
I would want to say yes. Because mostly I do, but there are those times that I speed, right? So I would have to say no even one time if I don't.
Yeah.
I'm breaking the law.
Well, right? This is exactly what Paul argues
exactly.
In the New Testament.
That's what I'm trying to say is this is the focus here. But when it says, do you keep them? To me, keeping them is keeping them mostly.
I see.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So there's that variance. So, but if you're like, well, no, I don't keep them perfectly, I could... Yeah,
so what does the Bible say? First of all, I got two things to say, and you can add to this later. Yeah. Number one, these covenants aren't biblical.
No.
So that's the first thing.
Not at all.
But number two, all of the requirements of the law,
all
of the requirements of the law were fulfilled perfectly by Jesus.
100%.
Not by us.
By his blood.
By his blood.
Like,
that's the gospel.
That's the covenant.
That's the good news, right?
Yeah. Our covenant is his blood. And that is why he took the wrath of God, the cup, right? That was the wrath of God. Like, he took the wrath of God for us. We deserve the wrath. And yet he took the cup that he said he didn't want to take, but he took it on behalf of us. And I'm convinced, and I don't know about you, Brian, but I'm convinced that he saw every single man, woman, and child on that cross that would have ever lived, you know, past, present, and future. Like, that's how personal it was for him to do that. The only one that could have come down off the cross on his own power, on his own accord, had no reason to be on the cross, but he was punished for us. And that's why, to me, it's blaspheming when I'm trying to proclaim my worthiness, when I'm not worthy. Every single one of these questions, I am not worthy, Brian. I am not worthy. And that's why, knowing the truth about who Jesus is, knowing the truth about the gospel that was delivered once to the saints, right? Not multiple times, different times where things changed. It's grace through faith. It's simple. It's easy. And yes, it's okay. You don't have to have control of that. Jesus does.
Okay, so this is question 13?
Yep.
Now, it did start with saying, how was the beginning of this question? Unless this is your first.
Oh, if you have your previous, if you've previously received your temple endowment.
Which I haven't.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm taking this one.
So if you haven't, then
I'm good because I haven't heard the covenant.
You haven't
gone
to the temple yet, so you don't know.
So I get this one. Yep, so I'm giving myself this win. So I'm now 8 out of 13, still failing. What's question 14?
But here's the thing, though. At your age, you should be.
But come on, I'm a new convert, Bishop.
So I'm new to this. In that case, then you would pass because you'd be like, yeah, I'm a new convert. It's been less than a year.
Gotcha.
My focus is the Book of Mormon.
Yeah.
Diving into that. So yeah, so you get the pass.
Okay, thanks.
All right. So question 14, are there serious sins in your life that need to be resolved with priesthood authorities as part of your repentance?
What are they getting at here?
So serious sin could be murder, could be adultery, could be fornicating with my neighbor, or whatever the crazy stuff that people are doing today. You know, they put a bunch of rings, their keys in a pot, and they all pull out their, you know, they pull out whatever keys they pull out is who they sleep with.
Wow.
There's a lot of crazy things that are going on, but yeah, serious sin could be any of that. Mm. And as I understand, if you answer yes to murder, there's no way a bishop or stake president could ever authorize you to go to the temple. You would then have to go to a general authority in order to be cleared. So if you're like, yeah, 15 years ago, I killed someone and I was in prison for 9 years. I served my time and I've been let out of prison. So if I'm declaring myself as a serious sin that I had murdered someone, but I'd gone to prison, paid my time, the bishop or stake president would not have the power to clear that. Okay. They would have to go to a general authority. So then the bishop would write a letter with me writing a letter, and then the general authority would have to give us clearance to move forward.
Because this is all about...
And I think that's the only...
Okay.
That may be the only one is murder, but...
So if it's like, you know, I'm a swinger. My wife and I have been swingers. Swinging.
That's the word I was trying to
then
get.
They can, then the bishop, they have enough authority for that thing.
Because they would say, are you practicing that today?
Okay.
And I'd be like, well, I stopped 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Then he'd be like, all right, do you know how serious this is and what you're doing to your body and desecrating, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, yeah, yeah, okay. You know, and then the bishop would be like...
So the bishop could handle that one.
Like the bishop could.
Is this written down somewhere? Who has what authority to absolve?
I think the bishop has a bishop handbook that actually goes more detail of what they can clear or what they can't. And so then they would be like, I don't feel comfortable doing this, so I'm going to have you go talk to the stake president.
And then the stake president can say, this is even above my head.
Could, and then they would go to an area authority, which would be a general authority residing in that area over multiple stakes. Mm. And then if that wasn't it, then you would have to go into an apostle.
Wow.
So
that's crazy. So it'd
be a 70 or an apostle.
Which to me, we're running out of time, but this is just all about all the levels of authority.
Good thing we're almost done here.
All the priesthood keys, which is just not, honestly, it's just simply not New Testament.
Yeah.
It's just not biblical. Yeah. It's like we have all these mediators and Jesus is supposed to be the ultimate mediator.
Well, I mean, that's just it. We're supposed to be confessing to God first. Mm. I don't find in any of the questions or any of the relationships with bishop or stake president where they asked, have you gone to God? Mm. Our first confession should be to God.
Wow.
Not to a bishop or stake president. That's not in any of these questions. And that's and the Bible is very clear on that. Confession is first to God in 1 John 1:9. Leaders can obviously help you restore your faith, but they don't stand in between you and God. And when you go to the bishop, let's be honest, like I went to the bishop and sometimes I felt less worthy getting my recommend than I did going in. Mm. And that's because maybe one of the questions the bishop maybe didn't feel like I was being completely honest, or maybe I just brushed over and he was frustrated or whatever. And so he could actually affect me going to God. And that's why in my journey out of Mormonism, I'm like, yeah, like I had a relationship with the bishop, stake president, and the men in Salt Lake. And when it came to Jesus, it was like, man, I'm so tired. Why didn't you just tell me to go to Jesus first? Isn't he enough? Isn't he the final authority? Isn't he the one that makes me worthy? So why am I doing this backwards? It kind of makes sense though, because with prophets, I'm looking backwards. With temples, I'm looking backwards, right? But if it was just Jesus and being like, man, I am so unworthy and every day I sin and I deserve the wrath and the punishment of God. And yet through the eyes of the Father, he looks through Christ and I am beautiful, right? Though your sins are as scarlet, they become white as drifted snow. And that's only through the blood of Christ, right? But again, it's frustrating because where is Jesus's worthiness in here? I'm not worthy. So who am I really declaring my worthiness to? God or to man? Mm. That's my question. We'll move on to question 15, Brian.
So I'm 9 out of 14.
9 out of 14 because you're brand new.
Because I'm brand new.
You're less than a year, so or you would have failed on that 13. All right, so question 15. Do you consider yourself worthy to enter the Lord's house and participate in temple ordinances?
That's such an interesting question at this point.
Once again, it's just another way to ask another question about the 14 that you've already asked, that you're declaring your worthiness on. But it's like, I think in the past they say, do you consider yourself fully worthy to enter the Lord's house and participate in the temple? So now I'm asking myself, I'm not looking to you, I'm declaring my worthiness to the bishop, but now I'm looking inside of me and I'm saying, am I worthy? I think that question 15 is now where I get to look inside of myself and all these questions and say, do you really believe that you're worthy?
That's crazy. It's causing you to sin.
Yeah.
You're declaring your own worthiness.
Well, that's exactly right.
Because my honest answer would be, no, I'm not worthy in myself, but Jesus makes me worthy.
But you couldn't say that, Ryan. Wow. You cannot say that. But Bishop, according to the word of God, I am unrighteous and unholy in every form and act, but it is only through the blood of Christ that makes me worthy. Again, if there's no sacrifice for sin, like go back to what high priest did and the sacrifice, there was always blood that was shed. And that blood was a temporary offering to cleanse the high priest and the people of their sin, right? So again, how does me going to the temple, declaring myself worthy, going in and doing handshakes and names and tokens and all these different things up to a veil that God ripped, you know, from top to bottom, again, why? The only part of me that's ever worthy is when I align my faith in him. And I accept his grace, that's unmerited favor of God. And I'm like, I don't deserve this. And the way that I break it down, Brian, is I'm like a newborn baby that just came out of the mother's womb and they hand it to me. Why do you love that baby? That baby's done nothing to love you back. Why do you instantly love that? This is the Father. Like, this is God loving us. Like, there's no reason to love this baby if I look at it from a world standpoint. But I instantly love this baby because of the value that God says that he or she has.
But it's interesting. This question has to be at the end because if you've made it this far.
Thank you for saying that.
14 questions of like working through your worthiness. I could see that at this point you're like, yeah, I think so. Now that we've had this conversation, you've bolstered my, if I've made it this far. You haven't kicked me out yet.
Wait for question 16.
I can't wait to hear what it is. What is it? What's question 16?
Oh, it's more of the same. Do you have any personal unresolved questions about your worthiness that you need to discuss with the bishop or stake president? Again, so it's another drill down. And it's frustrating because it's like, you want to give me a temple recommend, but you're also trying to get me to go deeper and just be like, well, what else am I supposed to declare to you? Like, what do you want? Like, what else do you want me to say? But it's just, it's all focus on what do I think of myself? And it's not like, hey, Lane, what does Jesus think of you? When God looks at you, Lane, who does he see? Does he see a filthy rag? It's like, yeah, when I'm trying to say, look at me, God, look how good I am. Look at all the temple ordinances and all the baptisms and all the sealings that I've done during my life. Like, isn't that enough? Yeah, it's about my focus on something that doesn't matter because God wants my heart. And when I'm doing all these things, really, active LDS, you got to ask yourself, I mean, the pressure to look and act the part of an LDS person is very high because you don't want to let down your friends, your family, your grandparents. And so getting through these questions, if you can answer the right, you know, give them the right answers, then you're also saying, I'm good too. I'm worthy too. When I'm like, well, where's Jesus? So one of the first questions is, do you believe in God the Father and Jesus Christ? But at the end of the day, we didn't talk about who God and Jesus are and how is a person made righteous. According to these questions, now I'm declaring my righteousness. It has little to do with his righteousness, more to do with my own.
So what would bottom line it for us here as we wrap this up, Lane, what would you say to the, you know, the Mormon listener who's been listening to this, it's been blowing their mind to view these questions through a different lens. And maybe they've gone through this interview 20 times like you did. Mm-hmm. How do you now as a Christian, how do you view your worthiness or your righteousness?
Well, that's easy because we're invited to come boldly to the throne of grace. It's we're not supposed to hold back. Because it's not about me, it's about him. And that is so refreshing when I can walk up to the throne and realize, man, I am so not worthy for this, but I am because you paid the highest price. The wrath of God was spilt out on you in every form and fashion, and I've placed my faith in that. And so it's not about me, it's about you. So come boldly to the throne of grace. It's not come to a man's office to prove myself first. Like, come boldly to God's throne, grace through faith.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to share this episode with a friend. Find more resources to talk about these topics with your small group, family, or mentor on pursuegod.org.